Hello and welcome to Doc Talk. I'm Kenny Walter, Assistant Managing Editor of ACP Live. On November 30th, the FDA approved RBX2660, the first ever live microbiota therapeutic for the prevention of C. difficile infections. After more than a decade of research, the approval represents a major shift in C. difficile care. Currently, with multiple products in later phase trials, there's a good chance that RBX2660 is the first, but nowhere close to the last LMT approved by the FDA for CDI. In the days following the approval, I was joined by Dr. Sahil Khanna of the Mayo Clinic and Dr. Paul Feierstout of the Yale University School of Medicine in separate interviews to discuss RBX2660 and what happens next. Both doctors were investigators on the PUNCH-CD3 trial, the pivotal trial that may have led to the approval. I hope you enjoy my conversations with both doctors, starting with Dr. Khanna now.
Okay. To start things off, yesterday was a big day. RBX finally got approved. You worked on this product. You worked in the studies. What is your initial reaction? How happy are you that this is finally FDA-approved treatment?
My initial reaction was, I was like, wow, wonderful. I did my little happy dance in my office when I got that news. A lot of my friends texted me who are in the space. I got multiple emails. We saw that online. I think this is such a big achievement for the field of medicine in general. We've had medical treatments in different domains for a long, long time. We've got surgeries, we've got antibiotics, we've got immunotherapy, we've got so many different forms of treatment. But for the very first time in human history, we now have an FDA-approved treatment that targets gut bacteria in general, and we are taking care of a disease that's very, very close to my heart, C. difficile infection. We know that about 500,000 people in the United States and several million across the world suffer from C. difficile infection. There is a sizable fraction that get recurrent infection, meaning the infection keeps coming back, and all that we've had over the years for them has been antibiotics, and more recently in the last decade, unapproved, unregulated fecal microbiota transplantation, and we've been doing that too. But for the very first time, we now have an FDA-approved product. There have been many, many studies that RBX2660 has conducted over the decade, and we've been very fortunate as a center at Mayo Clinic to have participated in all of those, and we've helped design some of those studies, and we follow those patients over the years. There was a early study, then there was a phase two study, there was a phase three study, there have been a couple open label studies, there have been long-term safety data. And what we've realized over the years is that yes, this product works for our patients, it's superior to placebo, there are no safety signals that we are seeing with this product at all. And I think that's where it's super exciting. This is the first in the many of what's gonna get approved for microbial therapeutics is how I think about it. There are other treatments that are out there that are currently either in phase two or phase three clinical trials. There is one other treatment that has finished phase three clinical trials and is also going through FDA approval and hopefully will be approved in the next year. But at this time, for today, for yesterday, for December 2022, in this particular year, we now have an FDA approved treatment. And my hope is that it starts becoming available to our patients in the near future. So what is RBX2660? Let's talk about that a little bit.
Sure.
RBX2660 is a product that's derived from donor stool. Donors are well characterized by a detailed history questionnaire, several blood tests for infectious diseases and others, and several stool tests, and also make sure that they're not carrying infections like SARS-CoV-2. This is all under guidance of the FDA. Over the years, with this clinical development program and even our fecal transplant program, donor screening has evolved as you've seen more and more infections that are just spreading in the community. So well-screened donors, the product is manufactured in a standardized manner. Every donor screened similarly, every batch is manufactured similarly, and it's stored similarly. And every product, every dose can then be traced back from a recipient to donor in case there is an adverse event that happens. No adverse events have been traced so far, which is like infection transmission has not happened in this clinical development program, but there is the ability to trace that. And then for patients, this is so wonderful because this can be given after antibiotics are completed. So if I am a patient who has recurrent C. difficile infection, I've had it 2 or 3 times, and I'm thinking enough is enough, I need to get something done. The first step is you get treated for the infection with an antibiotic such as vancomycin or fidaxomicin. As you start feeling better in about 10 to 14 days or so, you stop the antibiotic, get it out of your system in 24 to 72 hours. And then this product is a single one-time office-based enema therapy. So there is so many advantages of this product over traditional fecal transplantation from a patient perspective, meaning there's no bowel preparation, there is no anesthesia or sedation, and it is an in-office procedure that can be done very, very simply, very easily. It's a small volume of an enema, about 5 ounces in volume. It's administered to the patient's rectum, the lateral on the left side for a little bit, and then you're done. And then you're done and you don't get C. diff back again. It just works like magic how we think about this. So I think this product in potential has the ability to replace what we have been done with fecal transplantation. Not only this product, others that will hopefully get FDA approval in the future.
Okay. Now, I'm glad you mentioned FMT. A lot of doctors have told me that FMT kind of birthed this class of treatments, and the effectiveness of FMT led to not only your product, but, you know, the other ones we've talked about, SCR 109, CP 101, who might get approved in the next year or so. But how would you compare FMT to a product like RBX, both in terms of invasiveness to the patient, effectiveness, safety? Are this new class of treatments so much better than FMT, which obviously never got FDA approval?
Great question. What we've learned in all these microbial therapeutics or live biotherapeutics is building on the FMT literature. We've learned a lot from FMT. We've done it in a way, we've faulted, we've had infection transmission with FMT. So we've learned a lot from FMT. FMT in general has not been compared head to head in a clinical trial with RBX2660 or ACR109 or other similar products. The clinical trials have always been designed comparing these products to placebo. So you can't really compare efficacy. But what we have seen in meta-analyses that the FMT efficacy probably ranges anywhere between 67% and 82% in controlled settings. When you do it in open label settings, the efficacy can be 90% or higher, but that's with multiple doses. The patient populations are different. The amount of follow-up is different. So really can't compare efficacy in that manner. The way you can compare efficacy is you compare RBX2660 to giving that or not giving that. And I think that's fair. But overall, the range of efficacy of FMT, if you look at that range in control settings, it's very similar to what we see in RBX2660 or other products that are in clinical development. In terms of invasiveness, as I mentioned earlier, this is no sedation, no bowel preparation, no anesthesia, and no invasive procedure like a colonoscopy or upper endoscopy delivery. So it's non-invasive. It's much better for patients. If you speak to patients who've had C. difficile infection, the last thing that they want is to do a bowel preparation and get diarrhea again. They have so much anxiety every time they get diarrhea. They don't want diarrhea again. And I think that is really telling that this product doesn't involve a bowel preparation, no sedation. In-office procedure. So you don't have to go to the endoscopy suite or an ambulatory surgery center. You can do that as an in-office procedure.
Okay. Now, obviously this product is built off of donor stools. Is there a concern that obviously you need volunteers and you need people to qualify? Is there any concern that, you know, we might be low on stools at a given time and unable to kind of manufacture the treatment as much as we'd like or need?
I would not be concerned about that. I think the overall absolute number of healthy people in our community who are able to donate is high. just because we've got a decent population in our community. If you look at the relative numbers of if 100 people apply to donate stool, less than 5% of them would actually be eligible to donate stool. But if you look at the absolute number of people who are able to donate, and I think we have to be very careful, not anybody and everybody who wants to be a stool donor can be a stool donor. The donor screening process is very, very rigorous, number one, but also it's iterative. A new pandemic like SARS-CoV-2 comes our way, that changes our donor screening process completely. You got to adapt to that. As long as you stay above that, I think we're going to have to do that because that'll keep it safe. Safety first before anything else. But I don't believe that we will run out of stool. I don't think that's going to be a problem going forward.
Okay. Now, how important is the timing of this? We do have an aging population. The baby boomers are becoming seniors. Mm-hmm. And obviously age is not only a risk factor for C. diff, but it's a risk factor for hospitalizations for a number of different reasons, which when you're in the hospital, you're then at a increased risk of C. diff by itself. So how important is it, given that fact, that we now have a treatment for recurrent C. diff?
Oh, it's amazing. I would say that we have seen that when people get recurrent C. diff infection, that increases healthcare utilization in terms of cost, but also emergency room visits and hospital days. People who have C. diff have longer length of stay in the hospital, end up going to the nursing home more often. So there is larger healthcare utilization. If you speak to any hospital across the country since the last year and a half or 2 years, hospitals are running at maximal capacity. 95%, 90% occupancy, no beds in the region. That's a very common phone call that I get, that there are no beds in the region, like literally no beds. So whatever we can do to reduce one readmission, to reduce one hospitalization, to reduce length of stay in one person, that's going to help us take care of the broader patient population. You're right. We have an aging patient population or aging population in general, and that population is going to need more and more healthcare. And that's why we're seeing higher healthcare utilization. So whatever we can do, and I hope and I believe that as products like RBX2660 or now known as Rebiota come into play, they will help us reduce overall healthcare utilization, which is where we need to go.
Okay. Now, we spoke about two other products that are pretty far along in the process. I know Sears has a PDUFA date for, I believe, April for their product. And I don't know about CP, but I know they presented data at recent meetings as well. How important is it to have that kind of competition and to have three companies kind of moving forward together with products of their own, kind of so you all could kind of look at what everyone else is doing and kind of see what's working, see what's not working? I'm sure there's been failed attempts as well that you kind of learned from. So how important is competition when you're developing a drug like this?
Competition is absolutely important and critical is how I would think about it. And I don't think about it as competition. I think about it that all of these therapies complement each other in one way or the other. That's how I think about this. We've been fortunate at Mayo Clinic to have a relationship with all of these, not three, but actually four companies that are front runners in C. difficile infection. Let's talk about them separately. So Seres Therapeutics has now gone through a phase one, phase two, and a phase three clinical development program, and also an open label study. And they've presented data in multiple conferences. Manuscripts have been published. And they have positive data that the FDA is considering. That's a capsule-based therapy. It's derived from donor stool, but it's different in a way that it's not whole stool. It's only spores. So they treat donor stool with ethanol, kill everything else. Just the spores are left behind. It's a multi-day treatment that patients swallow. Does require a small bowel prep that is needed. So that's Seres Therapeutics. And they will also be another, I would say, quiver that we have in our sleeve or armamentarium that we have to fight against C. difficile infection. There'll be patient preference. Some people would want oral, some would want rectal therapy. There would be insurance preference, I would suspect, as these come through. And there would also be infrastructure that would be needed to store these products and administer. So there's going to be those subtle differences that are going to be out there. In addition, the other difference, at least in the large clinical development program amongst these two drugs, at least in the double-blinded placebo-controlled trial, RBX2660 included any recurrence. in the series program, they included multiple recurrent or three or more episodes or two or more recurrences in the placebo-controlled trial. Now, series is doing another study where they're including people with earlier episodes, but at least in the placebo-controlled trial, the patient populations are slightly different. So that's another exciting product that's going to come, hopefully, be approved next year as they have a PDUFA date, as you mentioned. And then the other two products that are CP101 from Finch Therapeutics has just started its phase 3 clinical trial. And that is also whole stool derived, and it is a capsule-based therapy. So we'll await and see what those results show. And then finally, the one that Kenny, we're also excited about is from Vedanta, which has completed a phase 2 trial. And based on the positive results, I'm suspecting that they probably are thinking of a phase 3 study. Vedanta is different in a way that it's non-derived from donor stool. So it's independent of donors. It's a defined microbial consortia grown in a lab, every capsule similar to the other. But we still need to do a larger phase 3 clinical trial before that gets. So we're a couple of years away, I'm suspecting, probably from both CP101 and V303 or Finch or Vedanta, where they're at.
All right. And then the only other question I would have then is, we obviously just talked about four separate products, one of which is approved now. A certain segment of the population will respond to antibiotics and not have recurrent C. diff. Then others will have recurrent C. diff, and now they have treatments for that that hopefully is as effective in clinical practice as is in trials. Forecasting 5-10 years down the line from now, would recurrent C. diff hypothetically be kind of a rare issue and only a sliver of the population that maybe are suffering now actually have recurrence?
I'm hoping that 5-10 years down the line, we become even smarter in the management of C. difficile infection. I'm hoping that one thing that to change would be not let get people multiply recurrent C. difficile infection, but try to use all of these therapies after two episodes. So everybody's got two episodes, try to get this therapy. And then perhaps I'm also hoping that in the next 5-10 years or so, you become very smart where you know at the very first episode that this person is a high risk of recurrence and will benefit from one of these therapies. And I think for that, we need large databases. We probably will need more microbiome-based testing, perhaps point of care microbiome-based testing. So that'll help us determine. So if I'm a patient who has first episode, my doctor can look at me and say, look at my clinical data and say, okay, you have these risk factors for recurrence. You should be the one who should actually get one of these treatments after the first episode, because I have 90% certainty that you're going to get it back otherwise. So I think that kind of data will emerge as we get these therapies out in clinical practice. We're also excited about other things that are out there. Intravenous bezlotoxumab is FDA approved and has been approved for about 6 years now. That reduces risk of recurrence, using that more in clinical practice. There is a clinical trial that's going to be started hopefully in the near future on non-toxigenic C. difficile infection. So it's a bacteria, C. difficile, but does not produce toxin, and in phase 2 trials had been shown to reduce risk of recurrence significantly. So something like that will be up our sleeve in the next 5-10 years. So our hope is that just like today's world, we think Hep C has so effective treatments that it's going to be a disease of the past in the near future. I'm hoping that recurrent C. difficile infection becomes a disease of the past. But Kenny, my biggest hope is not just recurrent C. difficile infection. We need to strive to get to a point that C. difficile infection in itself becomes a thing of the past. I think that's where I would like it to go in my career, if possible. And we become that smart that we vaccinate people with effective vaccines who are at risk of getting C. difficile infection. A couple of vaccines have been tried, but have not been successful. But hopefully we develop vaccines against C. difficile infection. Hopefully we develop microbial-based therapies that can be given before somebody gets C. difficile infection. So if I'm 70 years old, or by the time I'm 70 years old and I get kidney disease and I go to the dentist and they give me clindamycin, it's high certainty I'm going to get C. difficile infection. Perhaps at that time, there's a microbial therapeutic that can be administered to me before even I get C. difficile infection, maybe right after I get antibiotics, and we get smarter and we prevent primary C. difficile infection. I'm hoping that's what I see in my career, that we try to get rid of not recurrent, but maybe primary C. difficile infection, and that'll be the ultimate win for the field.
All right. Well, thank you so much, and congratulations on the approval yesterday.
Yes, we're super excited.
Thank you so much. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Kenny.
Thank you very much, Dr. Connor, for joining me. Now, here's my conversation with Dr. Fairstout.
I guess to start things off, what is your reaction to the FDA news, and how exciting is this for to finally have one of these products that we've talked about for a couple of years on the market, or not on the market, but available, soon to be available for patients?
You know, this is such an exciting time. Patients are really going to benefit. The fact that the FDA has chosen to approve a product for fecal restoration and microbiota restoration therapy really changes the game. It changes the game for C. difficile because this treatment has been associated with reduced rates of recurrence in patients that have recurrent C. difficile, but it also starts the ball in motion for other disease states. And we're currently actively studying a number of other disease states to first understand what the problem is in the microbiota and then use this type of therapy in the future. So this is really precedent setting, and hopefully will set the stage for future treatments for other diseases as well.
Okay. I know it's early, but do you think a product like RBX would be available for, let's say, IBD, or the principle and the concept of RBX would be used to make an IBD-specific product?
So that's an excellent question. And what we have to look at is, what is RBX2660? RBX2660 is a broad consortium of both spore and non-spore-forming bacteria. Therefore, it is more like, in terms of the full complement of microorganisms, the old school methods of fecal transplant. Of course, in a much more sophisticated and safe way, because it's gone through FDA overseen trials, and there's quality metrics of the samples and the material that's going to be administered. So it's much, much more sophisticated and much safer. But in a broad consortium, yes, this could potentially be thought of as a product that might go under study for patients with Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis, and the like. But of course, we have to understand what the studies show before it gets used in, I'll say, more prime time in a more broad sense.
Okay. Now, we've talked about the competition that was brewing between the three products that had later phase data. Do you think that ultimately helped RBX and helped everyone, just having other products kind of at the same place or in a similar place, looking to see what they're doing, looking to see what worked there, what didn't work there, and kind of crafting your own product that way?
So that's an excellent question. The reality is, competition breeds efficiency. So yes, were the companies pressed to try to be the most efficient with their pathway for FDA approval? Absolutely. Unfortunately, though, that translates a little bit into making the studies more challenging to enroll. So if you have two studies running at once that are enrolling the same patient population, then it's harder for one study to finish before the other. And which study does the patient get enrolled in, and which study they choose, and which sites enroll in which studies, all that gets involved. The most important element here, though, is that the studies did complete, and they did complete despite a pandemic. Thankfully, the pandemic onset was right at the time when both RBX2660 and SCR-109 were finishing their phase 3 trials. So they were largely enrolled and essentially complete at that point. Otherwise, I think we would be looking at a much more significant delay. Now, from the studies, though, feeding off of each other, we learned a lot. We learned a lot about the importance of diagnostics. We learned a lot about the impact of the number of episodes that patients have with C. difficile and how that might impact outcomes of patients that receive products called live biotherapeutic products. We learned about the impact of subtle changes, meaning the time frame from the end of antimicrobial therapy to intervention with a product like RBX2660. So all of those factors were important learning pieces, and separate companies that were developing products, we learned from the correct elements of the studies, but also perhaps some of the missteps from the study. So hopefully now we're much more sophisticated in our approach to these clinical trials and how we move forward.
Okay. Now, we've also always talked about how FMT kind of birthed this kind of product. With this approval and presumably other approvals in the coming year or two, is FMT kind of obsolete, or is there still a place to use FMT in certain circumstances?
Very important question. Where does FMT fit in the broad scheme of things? In my view, FMT, the more rudimentary methods, have largely been left on the wayside. Now, FMT has places within clinical trials and investigator-initiated studies, absolutely. We should be considering this. We should be defining problems, defining deficiencies in various disease states, and then using FMT to try to supplement or restore those deficiencies and see what the outcomes are and see if patients feel better. When it comes to C. difficile, FMT is absolutely obsolete. We now have an FDA-approved product that has consistent safety and efficacy profile across over 1,000 patients, 3 phase 2 trials, 2 phase 3 trials. So really, we see that consistent safety and efficacy. I think there's absolutely no reason to consider FMT.
Okay. Now, I spoke with Dr. Khanna from the Mayo Clinic, who I believe was also on this study with you last week, and he was pretty confident that much like how we're making a lot of progress in eradicating hepatitis C, that maybe not eradication, but this will go a long way to basically making C. diff and recurrent C. diff a rare event. Is that how you see it? Do you think this is monumental in reducing the recurrent C. diff going forward?
For the C. difficile population, I absolutely agree with what Dr. Khanna said. Essentially, you have to realize that previously we had this, I'll call it technology. We knew that it could work, but it wasn't broadly available. It was hard to get. It wasn't easy. You couldn't pick up the phone or send an email or send a prescription and get it. So you had to be referred to specific centers like Dr. Khanna's and mine. And that's challenging for patients. Now with wide availability and an FDA-approved product, I agree. But really important to consider is who we're using this for. It's so important to get a proper diagnosis of a patient with C. difficile and recurrent C. difficile, because very frequently about 1 in 4 patients with recurrent C. difficile will develop a post-infection irritable bowel syndrome. And if you do this microbiota restoration therapy in those patients, you won't necessarily get the outcome that you're looking for. So two key pieces here is wider availability, but appropriate diagnostics. And if we have that combination, yes, I agree. Recurrent C. difficile will largely become a thing of the past.
Okay. Now, obviously, access to medicine can be a big problem in this country. And this product in particular is reliant on volunteer stools. Do you anticipate any kind of issues with maybe rural communities not having access, or is that a concern of yours?
So another really important question. With RBX2660, I do not expect this to be a problem. The same thing with any FDA-approved product. These products will be shipped essentially probably overnight to wherever we need it to be. So long as you have postal access, you should be able to gain access to this product. And even things like other private companies that deliver packages. In the Amazon world, package delivery is essential. And that's something that any FDA-approved product will be able to be delivered. So this product, RBX2660, should not have a problem with that.
Okay. And is there any concern, since it is relying on volunteers, that there might be situations where we can't make the product?
So obviously all of us move our bowels, so that pipeline won't get cut off. The best answer I can give you is with regards to when the pandemic hit. So when the pandemic hit, essentially the vast majority of fecal transplants went away. But at our center, we had access to RBX2660. And the RBX2660 material was donated before December 1st, 2019. Why is that date important? That date is important because that's the day that the FDA said anything donated before that can still be used. Anything donated after that needed to be discarded. Well, we had plenty of product for our patients, and we became an even larger referral center than we already were because patients couldn't gain access elsewhere. And my assumption is that the company that produces RBX2660 has a significant backlog already of pre-screened, quality metric verified material that's ready to go, so that if there were some sort of a bottleneck in the future, we would have plenty of supply so that patients can benefit most.
Right. Is that that December 1st, 2019 date because of COVID? Because anything yes. after that, there's a risk of the person having COVID?
Yes, the December 1st, 2019 date was set because that was the first, after that date, was the first time it was believed that COVID was originally seen in Asia. And to be cautious, they said December 1st, 2019 in the United States as well.
Gotcha. All right. And then obviously, even after approval, drugs and products and treatments get studied. What else would you like to study in terms of RBX? What you know, clinical practice, clinical efficacy, is there anything you want to look at in the coming years?
So one of the really nice elements of RBX 2660 is it's gone through a really hearty pipeline of trials leading up to this. Wide arrays of patients, open label studies with hundreds of patients involved, obviously the randomized control trials, the phase two, the phase three. I think as we move forward, we have to be realistic about what might be occurring in the real world. Some providers might want to apply RBX 2660 through a colonoscope. So maybe that's not one place that we might want to consider a clinical trial. How effective is it through a colonoscope when we administer it maybe into the cecum, the end of the colon, and the transverse colon? Other areas, as we mentioned earlier, I think it's really important to consider other indications besides recurrent C. difficile. So the indications that are most interesting to me would be things like ulcerative colitis, post-infection irritable bowel syndrome in the GI space. But of course, these things would require clinical trials before they're used in broader patient populations.
All right. Well, that's really all the questions I have. Is there anything else you want to say?
So we are finally here. We have been racing and racing, at least for me, the last 10 years, and in the last couple of years, hearing about these products and these live biotherapeutic products. And it feels like we're constantly running to this horizon, and we finally have arrived. And for patients, this is really exciting. For providers, this is probably even more exciting. But overall, it's just finally achieved the goal that we have been working towards. We understand how live biotherapeutic products work in recurrent C. difficile infection. We understand the basic science. We understand the mechanisms. And we also see that this is really, really effective and most importantly, safe. So as we move forward, it is so exciting to understand that we have live biotherapeutic products that are going to be available widely.
Great. Well, thank you. I would like to thank both Dr. Khanna and Dr. Firestaff for joining me for the illuminating discussion about RBX 2660 and how C. difficile infections might become a thing of the past. As always, you can find us at Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn, and please visit hcplive.com for all the Lewis gastro and C. diff news. As always, thank you for listening.